Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to a very cold episode of Between Two Chairs. It's below 50 degrees here in Miami as we are filming. That is very cold for us, if anybody knows South Florida weather. But my name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is the, and I just found this out, guys, the very quiet sneezer, Jennifer Wollman. Hi, Jennifer. Say hi.
Hi. I think that's TMI.
Oh, that's TMI? I was thinking, I bet you've never been introduced with that.
No, ever.
Well, thank you, everybody. We're so excited as we are getting things moving in 2025. And we have a couple of episodes in which we're going to discuss a market update in South Florida. And we have one coming up that is coming after the CCIM Outlook event. I know in that episode, we're going to break things down a little more granular and a little more specific to each asset class. But I know today one of the things we discussed was to just kind of give people an overview of, you know, boots on the ground, what has been happening in our marketplace here in South Florida.
Correct. And again, this is just a generic overview of what happened in 2024. It was another slow year. It was better than 2023, but the number of transactions and the speed of transactions, especially due to all of the uncertainty in the market with what the Fed was going to do, whether they were going to lower rates, how low they were going to go, etc., and a presidential election, all that kind of stuff really slowed the market. However, that being said, you know, we had a really strong market in spite of that, strong relatively, with just in the third quarter, the first three quarters of 2024, we did $4.8 billion in commercial real estate transactions. So that was pretty good. And the dollar sales volume of office properties actually rose 10% to $617 million, with the median prices up 1%, and that comes from the Miami Realtors Commercial Division and our wonderful economist, Chief Economist Gay Gororaton. And lots of great updates. We'll post the link in our show notes. But after the election, you and I spoke about how all of a sudden, like, the faucets were turned on a little bit, and instead of it being a trickle, all of a sudden we started getting a lot of activity in terms of showings, whether for lease or for sale. Got a lot of leases executed in the fourth quarter, got a lot of sales done and closed in the fourth quarter. So I think this is a really good setting for where we're going to go in 2025. Also, speaking to our partners who are capital investors and developers as well, they've just been seeing a lot of opportunities, right? So all the stuff that didn't move and sell in 2024 is now kind of ripe for picking, and those that are running into issues in 2025 because rates didn't go down as much as predicted and expected means that there is going to be some pressure on some buyers whose numbers just aren't working. So there's opportunity, but there's also some optimism in terms of where the market's going in 2025. What did you see?
You know, I think that there are so many lessons to be learned from 2024. And I will first start by saying that and I know I'm late to the game, but I just started watching Squid Game on Netflix. And I don't want to give anything away, but if anybody has seen it, you know, it's a very shocking storyline. And, you know, and it's about these games that are being played. And the first game is this green light, red light. And it felt for the majority of the year that everybody was really very much on the sidelines because they were concerned about the uncertainty of the election, you know, and the uncertainty about, do we have inflation under control? And the uncertainty of, are we going to achieve a soft landing or are we going to go into a recession? And I think all of that combined, you know, when we told people, it really feels like everybody is on the starting line and they are very, very much afraid to run out of the gate, you know, and all of a sudden after the election, which is why I'm very glad that you brought up the numbers in the first three quarters, I venture to say that the fourth quarter is going to be stronger and it's going to show it significantly there. And I venture to say that the first quarter of this year is going to show, you know, the effects of what happened after the November election, because all of a sudden we started to see properties that have been on the sidelines for 5-6 months that were not moving. All of a sudden there was an enormous amount of interest in the properties and we had multiple offers and we had contracts and people really wanted to execute and they wanted to get it done. And so the attitude was completely different. We are not making a commentary about, you know, who won or lost the election. We're only making a commentary about something that we have said repeatedly, which is that markets do not like uncertainty. They want to know what are the ground rules within which we're playing, and then they are going to go and make those investments. And I think the lack of uncertainty and understanding that we were on the other side of that, then I think that that played a role in what happened. But the money we always felt was on the sidelines and people were holding on. The lesson, there's a lot of lessons there, and I want to share two of them. One of them is Warren Buffett always says, you want to invest when people are afraid and you want to retreat when everybody is so incredibly optimistic, right? You gotta balance that out. I think there were a lot of great deals on the market. I remember looking at a lot of properties that I thought from any logical perspective made a lot of sense. And the only reason why they were not moving, it had nothing to do with price. It had nothing to do with condition. It had nothing to do with revenue that was being generated. It had solely to do with people not feeling that they had all of their information to confidently make a decision based on the macro, you know, social, political, economic of things. And I think that there are people lost out on a lot of great deals because, right? And we have that great episode with Lee Becker where we had the conversation about, you know, investing on the other side of scary, no, on
right,
the,
Dilly.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that was, you know, there was a lot of fear and I it held people back. I had a conversation with a broker yesterday who called me on a warehouse that we have on their contract. We're already on the other side of due diligence. It's scheduled to close in February. It went on the contract in December. This was one of those properties that where it just gathered a lot of attention very shortly after the election. And he was so disappointed when I told him that it was under contract. He goes, I've called 30, you're the 30th call today where I call on a warehouse and it's already under contract. And right. I said, man, you're like 3 months too late.
Right.
You know, your client had every opportunity. And this was for an owner user. I said, you know, for an owner user, the considerations are different.
There's even less risk, right?
Because you're going to run your business out of there. But that's just the reality. So, you know, from boots on the ground, anecdotal, well, we pretty much everything that we have under contract. And these things were in the market for some time, from land to office to retail to warehouse. It's been a whirlwind over the last 2 months.
And leasing as well. You know, right. We started to see a flurry of activity at the end of the year because buildings, you know, I just signed a lease with somebody who was in a building that had been on the market for a long time, and he was a tenant there. Mm-hmm. And it sold, and it was for an owner user who was buying it, and they wanted him out, and they were giving him all sorts of great payments to get out, but he had to be out by a certain date, and or they were just going to keep him and he wouldn't get those benefits. So all of a sudden there was that kind of activity, because that was kind of the, what do you call it, like the feeder effect, right? Somebody, a owner user, buys a building with tenants in there, and all of a sudden they want the building, so now they're creating another market for those tenants to go somewhere else. And so we did see some of that. We saw a lot of medical trade, a lot of medical buildings trade in terms of leasing. You know, in South Florida, we had a lot of medical companies declare bankruptcy and reorganize. So that allowed some space, which is in very, very high demand down here, medical space, to be released. Yeah. And we have other going along with kind of the baby boomer age and what we're seeing nationwide, that there is a big demand for not only senior housing, but also for more medical and alternative medical facilities. So we also saw a lot of leases being done, or we did a lot of leases for diagnostics and imaging centers, et cetera.
Correct. I think it's really interesting that you bring up, because I think there is going to be a lot of activity in the alternative medicine or the holistic medicine, or, you know, I think that there is a huge, you know, wave coming of those kind of spaces. And to your point, they're going to compete with traditional, you know, medical space tenancies. That is really interesting. I was looking at, you know, in November, NAR does these reports that are done by the different MSAs. And I was looking at the one here in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach area. And, you know, they break down basically from the macro to the micro. But look, I'm looking at this report on commercial real estate sector by sector office. Demand for office is stronger than nationwide, as this area has faster absorption rate of office space. The vacancy rates are in the single digits. You know, nationwide, they're still in the double digits. Multifamily, we know the demand has been crazy, with a vacancy factor that still hovers around 5%. Asking rents are still, slightly higher. There's been, you know, really some leveling off. And I mean by 1.6%, 2.4%. So it's not a huge increase, but they have maintained. Retail, we know it's, you know, very much in demand. Look at the retail vacancy rate, 2.7%. In the third quarter of 2024.
Yeah, I want to touch on that, because, sure, you know, you always hear, if it leads, if it bleeds, it leads, and negative headlines is what gets the clicks in the eyeballs. So you hear a lot about Restaurant Armageddon, or all of these big box stores going dark, and all this stuff happening with Big Lots, which now it looks like they're getting bailed out, or Party City, and you read those headlines, and if you're not deep in the weeds, you're going to be thinking, oh my gosh, the economy is going bad, all this real estate's coming on the market. Yeah. And in reality, those big boxes are leased up right away, usually at higher rents, because a lot of the big box tenants usually get in and they're a big anchor. So they end up paying a lower price per square foot than other tenants in the same building. So when they do give back a space, I think most shopping center owners and real estate owners of big box properties are doing a yippee, because now they get to bring it back at market rents. And same thing, demand for second generation restaurant space. We've talked about that over and over again on this podcast, that they're leased up right away in Miami. A group newer to Miami just opened another spot in Little Havana. And this is a more upscale kind of Mexican place, and they just opened up. So show a hospitality. So that shows that some of these bigger restaurant and hospitality providers and from around the country are now really focusing on Miami. It started a little bit before the pandemic, exploded during the pandemic, and that momentum has continued. So those spaces are being rented. So that's why I wanted, so when you hit the retail, that number is crazy. Because again, a couple of years ago, you were hearing about the retail apocalypse, right? That's how it was going to die. And everybody knows that real estate, like anything else that is in the economy is cyclical, right? And
right.
so every, not only does the market in general act in a cyclical nature, but asset classes do as well. And
right.
they're not always on the same, you know. So
right.
office is doing poorly. They're on a down cycle. Retail's on an up cycle. Before,
right.
it was completely the opposite, right? So,
that's
you know,
true.
The only thing that's
constant
in real estate is that it's constantly changing,
it's
I think,
changing.
As new ideas come on the market. So,
yeah.
Okay, continue with your report. Sorry.
No, it's a great point because we've also heard about these national retailers that are closing a lot of stores in all different kind of retail sectors. But to your point, I know yesterday, I think AutoZone announced that they were going to close down a bunch of their stores. But I was looking at a post from, a commercial broker that we know, he represents a lot of national tenants. And he's looking for space for this other auto retailer that is looking to expand. So to your point, I think a lot of those properties are going to get absorbed very quickly. And I've reached out to some landlords that have some of those retailers, and they already have it earmarked. And it's either another tenant in their own plaza or somebody has already reached out. So, you know, they're optimistic that those spaces are going to get absorbed, you know, rather quickly.
Yeah, to that point, again, remember I sent you an email or a text that Moho Donuts, all their spaces
right.
for drive-thrus to see if some of your
right.
customers want, they were immediately absorbed by the Hollywood Donut Factory.
Well,
like the Hollywood Donut Factory just
right.
contacted them and they're like, we'll
no,
take the
no, no,
commercial
no.
space.
I think Mojo sold to Hollywood Donut.
Okay.
So then that's
because
what
they were giving up
right.
up their space. So again,
right.
that's similar to the Big Lot story,
right?
So Big Lots was going out and now somebody came in, probably
right.
it's and the person who's coming in, it's probably more of a real estate move than it is a business venture Big
By
Lot
the way, have
style.
You ever been to Hollywood Donuts? I haven't, but I heard they're really, really good.
I have not. Because I try to avoid
okay.
places that I know can be addictive. Anything with a jelly donut. You know me and jelly donuts. So. Yeah, but
road
I'm gonna have
trip.
To go by. I drive by the one on Sunset and are on Red Road and US 1 all the time. And my car gets that pull where I have to see, is it the alignment or is it the Hollywood Donut
exactly.
factor?
No, I think what's really interesting is what this first and second quarter of the year are going to look like. I think there's going to be obviously a lot of moving parts, but we were in a very weird market during, you know, prior to the election. You know, I think those last 6 months before the election, there were so many weird things happening and the market felt very tense. And tense from the point of view of execution. And it felt like everything we closed, everything had to be perfect, you know, and it was a lot of hard work to get some of those deals through the finish line. I think the level of optimism, if you want to call it, or just the sense of security that a lot of the players feel that, you know, I feel now safe to execute and to go ahead and pull the trigger. But again, it really is an interesting dynamic because I really feel that people missed out on a lot of opportunity over the last 6 months that they could have had, you know?
And I think there's still going to be opportunity. It's not going to be to the extent
right.
that you had
no,
in 2024.
Sure.
And I know people that are always on a buying spree and are really, really good at being focused. I think of the Saglo companies. I think of
True.
Strip Mall Guy. I think of Beth, right?
True.
I think of people who are constantly on the lookout and buying. They might not have gone in because the numbers didn't work or because they're very narrow in terms of the criteria that a property needs to meet for them to buy. But I know deals did get done and they were very good deals for the people who took a chance on that. And what I did want to bring up is as brokers and investors ourselves, a lot of times we talk ourselves into fearful situations. And I think I'm going through and rereading the Daily Stoic. So that's like my meditation for the year. I go in and the Daily Stoic has a small little quote for every day.
Yeah.
And one of them for the first week of January was kind of along the lines of an AA meeting, right? Where it's like, acknowledge what you can control and give up what you can't control. And a lot of what goes on in the commercial real estate estate or in the real estate market and the economy in general are things we can't control. We can't control who's going to win.
Right.
We can't control. And if you think about it, the reality is on a national level, the politics and policies that go into play, they have some effect. They have effect on your taxes and whether you're paying capital gains and what the capital gains rate is and all of that. But from a buying perspective and an investing perspective, they don't really affect you as much as something such as a local ordinance would, like what's happening on Miami Beach with Ocean Drive, right?
Yeah, the only thing is that it's about the sentiment, and it's about we have always valued to have a peaceful transfer of power.
Correct.
That level of turmoil does affect markets. Right.
Correct.
And we see it in
short term.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think people were just bracing to see what would happen just based on what happened last time on January 6th. So I understand that people felt, well, I'll miss this opportunity, but I really want to have certainty that we're not going to have a recurrence of that. So, you know, I think that was a big part of the concern is how is this going to be and can we just get back to work? You know, one of the things that I have been reading also is that people have gotten very tired of following political news. I think there was a couple of stations. I heard this stat this morning. One of the 24-hour news channels, after the election, they lost 54% of their viewership. Mm-hmm.
So let's get back onto the commercial real estate channel then and talk a little bit more about what we saw in the market in 2024. So we were talking about multifamily in Miami-Dade County, the dollar sales volume of multifamily, the median sales price fell 1%.
Right.
We are still one of the top markets in terms of new construction starts for multifamily, and the dollar sales volume of multifamily buildings with five units or more fell 30% to $683 million. Again, I think some of that had to do with we had a lot of deliverables, so we have a little bit higher vacancy rate than we're used to. Again, it just depends on what niche within the multifamily market you're looking at. If you're looking at the smaller, older units, you're still doing pretty well. That's still the bulk of our affordable housing here. If it's a newer building, those rents are going to be higher, they're more amenitized, etc. So that affected. The dollar sales volume of industrial properties fell 27% to $687 million, but the sales price rose 16%.
Right.
Again, the lease rates for industrial are settling a bit because we had a lot of deliveries of new product in the industrial market, and I do think that's going to stabilize as well. My guess is that it already stabilized towards the end of last year and the beginning of the first quarter of 2025, that's going to pick up again as well, just based on the interest that we're getting, especially a lot of people from overseas are looking at bringing manufacturing to the States. So I think that's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, and you and I have discussed that we're in the labor and demographics business, and I think a big part of that is our job creation in South Florida is extremely strong, is stronger than job growth nationwide. Our unemployment rate is below 3%, where, you know, nationwide as of October was at 4.1%. We're on par with the U.S. with the share of workers teleworking, but, you know, our office sector is doing much better than anywhere else. We still have positive in-migration numbers. Our GDP growth South Florida-wise is larger than the nation. So, you know, all of that is, you know, the demand for multifamily is going to be driven by a lot of those factors. And the reality is that it is at this point, we've already had this, and it's a rare occurrence in history that it is, there's a lower cost of renting versus owning at this juncture. And so, you know, I think that momentum is going to carry. And I mean, as long as I've been in commercial real estate, multifamily has always been one of the darlings of the asset class. The only time that I can remember where multifamily was really hurting was during the boom of the housing leading up to the housing crisis, when people had very easy access to loans. Those were, you know, landlords were suffering higher than usual vacancy rates because people, you know, found it much easier to be able to buy.
And it was cheaper to buy than to rent at that point, because we also didn't have a lot of new housing rental stock, because we were building condos and housing, not rental buildings. Just real quick, touching on your demographic issue, that also drove some of the sales volume of our non-core commercial real estate, such as educational, senior living, and medical. So senior living and medical, again, the baby boomers. And those total sales, even though they make up less than 1% of the overall volume, educational sales were up 68%, senior living a whopping 271%, and medical 25%. And it's interesting, we're going to do an episode, we're doing an episode on probate. We have an episode on probate, and that's going to get all into the demographics and the baby boomers and what that means for the overall commercial real estate market. But going back to our geeky nerdiness and numbers, one of the things to really look at is how do the different largest demographics drive not only the sales and leasing of the commercial real estate market, but of the use, right? Because uses can change, right? So let's say, okay, let's say gyms are real popular now, but maybe the demographic as it ages doesn't need as many gyms. It needs more Pilates, yoga, physical therapy studios, right? To help with the aging process.
And to your point, you're beginning to see things, concepts like stretch zone, getting, absorbing a lot more, a space throughout the state. And, you know, to your point, and I think that's where the preventive or alternative medical side of the retail and office sector are going to continue to grow. And I was sharing this with you, but I think, you know, part of the conversation is there's something, I think they're calling it like a silver wave.
The
silver tsunami of retirements that are coming in. And so that's going to be really an interesting thing to monitor and to see how it is going to adjust. I was telling you, we were speaking yesterday about home sales because, you know, we also monitor the residential market, how the average age of the average buyer of homes in America has increased dramatically, and the average age of the seller as well. And how many properties were purchased where the buyer didn't have a child under the age of 18 in the household. Number of multi-generational property sales or purchases, you know, went up as well. You know, so it's going to be really interesting because there are like two or three numbers that are like record highs historically. And so, you know, somebody was telling me this, and I think it's an important thing to cover, and we'll probably cover it in another episode more in depth. But in America, the average age of a person forming a household is 26 years old, but the average age of a first-time home buyer is 38 years old, which is a huge gap, right? And I know it's affecting everyone that we speak to who have kids that are reaching that age, or older kids that are not, you know, they already have formed their families, they're renting, and they haven't been able to purchase. So, you know, that conversation about home affordability, about the creation of, you know, I think that there is a conversation to be have about making sure that we don't become a renter nation, because there is a incredible benefits to society when you have a high rate of home ownership.
Well, and to your point, I think that demographic gaps between the baby boomers and the millennial and the Gen Zs and the ages that they're forming households and able to buy is a huge driver of why multifamily has been so popular and why so many build-to-rent communities in addition to multifamily has been built. In a 2024 survey by Redfin, they found that 78% of Americans over the age of 60, 78%, want to remain in their current home.
Yeah.
If they own that home.
Right.
Or they rent that home, it doesn't matter. That's 78% of them.
Oh, wow. So you're saying that's, whether they rent or buy, they want to stay.
They want to stay in their current home, and it's driven by factors such as comfort, community ties, financial stability, etc. But that is a huge contributing factor to the lack of housing inventory for first-time buyers, right? So younger generations have this whole limited option. There's more price, you know, increase in pricing. That's why we keep saying that unless we start building more single-family homes in this country and places where people want to live, we're not going to be able to overcome the high price of housing because you have so much competition for that one house of a baby boomer who comes on the market. You've got all this pent-up demand because the reality is a lot of people, when they start their family formation, do not want to live in an apartment. No. They do not want to live in a condo. That's great when you're single. It's great when you're an empty nester. But when you have a family, the majority of the people want to live in, you know, the American dream of the little house with a yard and a white picket fence.
Well, two things. One is that that's building more housing is only one part of the equation. Correct. The other part of the equation is incentivizing that those houses are sold to individuals,
Not,
because
not
we also have
exactly.
We've seen in the last few years a huge absorption of single family inventory by big corporations, and so that I know that that's something that from an advocacy side, the National Association of Realtors is working on, is to find a tax incentive for sellers and developers of these properties to sell to an owner user,
to for a primary residence. And it's not just the big corporations, because actually more of the investment style properties are bought by mom and pops, but they're bought as either a second home, a vacation home, or an investment property. So again, those also take those properties for first time buyers off the market. So to your point, that's, you know, it's, advocacy is important for that, incentivizing the sellers. All right. Anything else in...
No, I think this is meant to be, you know, a bit of a combination of what we're seeing in the general numbers and what we have seen in our own practice.
Right.
We are looking forward to coming to you with more of an outlook of what 2025 is going to look like. But if the last month and a half of 2024 is any indication, you know, there were a lot of people on the sidelines that were not able to really deploy their capital to be able to make the investments that they want. And I'm seeing that that demand is not diminishing, is only increasing for quality products. So there's definitely a lot of movement as we start 2025.
And I agree. And this was mostly done on up to like third quarter hard numbers, right? Because there's always a lag in getting all of the data and property tax rolls. So we'll have a better idea of how strong the fourth quarter actually was. And to Fernando's point, it's really going to be the last month of the fourth quarter that I think we're going to see most of the activity in the numbers. But that being said, for a fun fact, we had some major, major commercial real estate transactions in Southeast Florida in 2024, including the sale of 701 Brickell Avenue for $443 million, West Dade Government Center for $182 million, the Aventura Corporate Center for $116 million, and One Town Center in Boca for $82 million.
Well, I think we're going to expect more record-breaking numbers and big transactions here in South Florida in 2025. Once again, I hope you're having a great start to your year, and thank you for taking the time to tune in to our podcast. Please know that we are now on Instagram. We're on TikTok. Right before they cancel it. So perfect timing. So please, you know, follow us at any of the social media sites. And of course, we are growing our YouTube channel Between Two Chairs on YouTube. So thank you again for pulling up a chair and listening in. Appreciate you all. Bye.
Bye.